Your program feature will begin in just a moment. First, a reminder, we have a Bible Institute here at BBN. At bbnradio.org, just click Bible Institute.
In the midst of your busy day, ladies, thanks for tuning in to Building Blocks for the Family. We're helping you build a strong family to the glory of God. Does the thought of raising teenagers intimidate you just a little? Maybe make you a bit unsure of how to handle it all? Well, Carol Parks has some thoughts for us today on parenting through the teen years. Here's Carol Parks.
When you pictured marrying and having a family as a child, what did you picture? Now, when you pictured having children, what was in your mind? I'll tell you what was in my mind. A two-story framed house surrounded by a picket fence. White, flowers growing, you know, it was, you know, just the perfect little picture. Darling toddlers in crisp white outfits, white, mind you. Little sweeties with gold or auburn or dark curls. Isn't that what you kind of pictured? Or maybe it's just me, because I pictured, when I got married, having children, and what I pictured was these sweet little ages. It never crossed my mind that they would grow up. And that's so funny because, like I say, my husband was a youth pastor for 7.5 years. I knew they would get to that stage. But it's just when we are picturing in our mind, we have this kind of ideal, almost Eden-like picture. And then they turn 13. And there's something that happens when kids turn 13. I don't know what it is, but it just completely changes them. It was funny because I was talking with a friend last week, and she was talking about her 15-year-old son, and she said, it's like he's been abducted by aliens. So that's a little bit of that stage. But that was not how I pictured children. You know, I just didn't picture the junior high and high school years. Well, welcome to Parenting Teens 101. It could be easily followed by Parenting Teens 201, 301, 401, and then a bonus refresher course, 501. Because you never quite get it right. Now, as you have succeeding teenagers, you kind of tweak your, you know, what works and what doesn't, and that's a good thing too. But we're all a bit walking blindly into it because, as you know, every child is different. I still am so amazed that our children who could be raised in the same home with the same parents could be so totally different. When Eric came along, I thought, okay, I kind of understand. And Jennifer came along, and she was totally different. So I thought, okay, we've got opposites. We can't have a third one. But when our third one came along, just completely different again. So just about the time you think you've got it down one time, then another one comes along and changes everything, changes the dynamics, which is a good thing, but just changes how you handle teenagers. I started thinking, and I'm just going to put this down as point one. Remember what it was like for you to be in junior high or in high school. I'll tell you what I want you to do when you go home sometime next week. I want you to dig through your attic boxes until you find your seventh grade yearbook. And you, it will be amazing. You will open that book and you will relive that junior high angst all over again. Because they were hard years. Let's just face it, they were hard. You haven't figured out who you are. Jan Sylvia said you don't figure out who you are until you're 40 or you know you got together. Well, I always said 30. And I always thought, because that was the time that Jesus started his public ministry when he was 30. I thought maybe there's something to that. You know, about 30, you start to begin to get it together. But anyway, It was a painful time. It was for me anyway. It was just a hard time. I have always told people I was so glad that my husband didn't know me in junior high or we would not be married today. I went through a really homely stage. I didn't think I... And see, that's the thing. When you're in junior high, you think you're never going to grow out of it. You think, this is how I'm always going to look. And so you panic about that. You know, it's just one of those junior high age things. How I wish I understood then what I know now is that for the most part, it doesn't matter. You think it does. You think everything is such a tragedy when you're in junior high. And you think that all the rest of life is going to be like that. And in truth, it is not. I wish I understood that I wasn't the only one that felt that way. That there were other kids who were in seventh and eighth grade who had the same struggles, the same fears, the same anxieties, but just could mask it a little better. I wish I had understood that those kids that were loud or obnoxious or were bullies, perhaps they came from homes that didn't have any of the stability that I did. And so they reacted by being loud and obnoxious and bullies sometime. In Harper Lee's book, To Kill a Mockingbird, the father, the attorney, Father Atticus Finch, one time said to his children, and this came at the end of the book, "You never really know a man until you stand in his shoes and walk around in them. Remind your children that you have stood in their flip-flops, and you know what it is like. And when your son or your daughter, now for us, it was our son that always said, no one knows what it's like to be me. That's what he would, that was his phrase. Remind them that you do. Because sometimes I think we alienate our children at that stage because they say, my mom doesn't understand me. But you and I have been there. We have gone through it. And maybe we wanted to put that way back in the recesses of our minds. But I think one of the things that we can do is empathize a little with what that stage was like. It was challenging. It was hard. That very son that would always say, no one knows what it's like to be me. He's our 21-year-old now, and he feels called to youth ministry, and he absolutely loves junior high kids. I said, Kyle, that is a gift from God. That's not my stage. Now, I love junior high kids if I can get them one-on-one. But in a group, oh, I just want to go crazy over them. but some of you may just have that gift who love junior high kids. Bless you. Praise God. They need people who will love them. Because you know, at that stage, they're just not that lovable. But anyway, help them understand that you know, that you remember a little of what it was like in those years. Number two, use your flaws to help them through hard times. If a teenager struggles with laziness, where did that come from? If they push the limits of family or civic rules, where did that originate? If they won't listen or appear unteachable, who brought that on? Who, me? Though I love to teach, and I believe one of my gifts is teaching, I have had begun to realize over the years that I am not very teachable. And so when one of our children would say, I can't do that, or it won't work that way, I just know it, I realized that as I needed to learn the lesson, then I could share that with that child who struggled with that a little bit. Turn in your Bibles, if you will, to Luke 5. When I came across this passage, and it's a very familiar passage, but I realized a couple of lessons that we could learn from it that have to do with just what we're talking about. Jesus has been preaching and teaching. He is very tired. He has gotten on a boat so he could come out a little bit. And I'm going to start with verse 3 of Luke chapter 5. He entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, and prayed that he would thrust out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the people out of the ship. Now when he had left speaking, he said unto Simon, launch out into the deep and let down nets for a draught. Now this is what's very interesting. What was Peter's profession? He was a fisherman, right? He knew everything about fishing. If there was anything to be learned about fishing, he knew it. He knew where the honey spots were. He knew every technique that there was because he was a professional fisherman. And now Jesus is saying, launch out to the deep. And Peter is thinking, this isn't going to work. This is not how it's done. I know all the techniques of fishing. So Simon answering said, Master, we've toiled all night and have taken nothing. Basically, he was telling Jesus politely, I'm sorry, Jesus, but this isn't going to work. I'm the professional here. But thankfully, that's not the end of the verse. Nevertheless, he said, at thy word, I will let down the net. And I even wonder if Peter is just saying, okay, I'll do this one more time to prove to Jesus that there are no fish in this lake right now. But he says, you know, maybe out of... Jesus is his friend, because Jesus is a good man. Okay, I'll appease him. I'll just let down my net one more time. And notice what it says. When they'd done this, they enclosed a great multitude of fish, and their net brake. And he beckoned unto their partners, which were in the other ship, they should come help them. And they came, filled both the ships, so that they began to sink. Now finally at this point, Peter's beginning to get it. Oh, I guess I can learn something. Maybe I can listen and I can learn something. Verse 8. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, depart from me, for I'm a sinful man, O Lord. Isn't that interesting that it's not Jesus' name he uses, but Lord? For he was astonished. He was so surprised. This wasn't supposed to happen. I know where all the places were, and it's not supposed to work like this, but... okay, I'll listen to Jesus. And he was right. He was astonished and all that were with him at the draught of fishes which they had taken. And so was James and John, which were his partners. And then it's interesting because this is the point where everything changes for Peter. Because he listened to Jesus, he had a ministry. Jesus said, from now on, Peter, I want you to start catching men. Ooh. So... my point is this. We know what our flaws are, even though we may not want to share them. We know what our flaws are. And by junior high and high school days, our kids know it too. You know how you can hide it from little kids? When they get bigger, you can't hide it from them anymore. And they figured out what your flaws are. All right. So when you know what your weaknesses are, and you ask God to help you in those areas that you are struggling with, then you need to share those lessons with your kids. Ask God to give you the scripture or the biblical principle that will help you. I know that's one of my problems, is not being very teachable. I used to try to blame it on my husband because my husband said, you know, I wasn't very teachable when I was a teenager. But I realize I can't blame Roger. That's one of my flaws, and I need to help my child through it. So whatever your flaws are, remember, you're the one that passed it on to your kids, unless they're adopted. Okay, so ask God to give you the scriptural illustration or principle as your teenager struggles with those same issues. Number 3, intervene with caution. There are times, certainly, in a child's life that warrants some adult intervention. If they're being picked on in the hallway or the playground or the bus, I understand that. So I want to make it clear what I'm trying to say here. But we have got to let our children go through difficulties or new life experiences because of the lessons that they will learn. If I could... I wanted to make the path as completely problem-free for my children as I could. I mean, that's being a mother. But my children at some point are going to figure out that life isn't fair, that things go wrong, and mom will not always be there. And the truth is, and this is a thing, I kind of got late, but I think I did finally get it. I don't know my kids' future. I don't know the hard things that are yet ahead of them. And if I have made everything, tried to make everything perfectly easy for them, boy, when those hard times come, they're going to fall hard. They're going to look around their shoulder, where is mom, where is dad, why aren't they here to help me? But because God knows what is ahead, the good things and the bad things that are going to happen to our children, then he knows best how to prepare them for it, doesn't he? Yes, he does. And so we cannot always be there to help our kid through every hard time. A kid has to learn hard knocks because he learns that God is going to take care of him. Let me put it this way. We don't know the things that lie ahead for our kids. Only God does. Only he knows how these difficulties are preparation for the future and the challenges yet to come. And then perhaps we might be teaching them the wrong lesson. For instance, if your child doesn't do their homework, so you say, okay, well, you just don't have to go to school today. What are we teaching them? That's the wrong thing. We're teaching them we can find ways to get out of it. If your child hasn't done his homework, you may just have to say, look, you're going to have to suck it up. You're the one that didn't do the homework. You're just going to have to face it. Okay? So we have to be careful about always covering for they're not using their time wisely. And I know there are certain times... You have to know what is going on in your family's life. But I'm saying I think we bail out our kids too much. And sometimes they need to go through something hard for the lesson they will learn. Because then what happens the next time they're kind of tired and they don't want to do their homework? How are we beginning to help them into a pattern that is not right? And a pattern that will develop into a lifelong pattern. So we need to help break that when they're young. We rob them, this is under the same thing, we rob them of the opportunity to see God work things out. And not us. When our children are going through a hard time, yeah, maybe I can make a phone call to the principal, to, you know, whoever. And sometimes I maybe ought to do that. But sometimes, at this stage of their lives, I think we need to say, why don't you pray about it? Why don't you see how God is going to work this out? And see, we get a little bit afraid. We say, well, what if God doesn't work it out the way we think and she should work it out? That's not our business. Really, ultimately, it is God. And God has our children's best in mind. And sometimes that means going through a little bit of a hard time and, okay, my mom and dad aren't there, but God is there. I can go to him. I can ask him for help and wisdom. The fourth idea under the same thing, we rob them of the ability to live on their own. Last summer, our daughter got married. And she was working with a girl who had gotten married just a month before. And so Ellen was giving her a lot of practical advice because she had been there, you know, the month before doing all these last-minute things, and I appreciated that. But Jennifer came home one day, and in a sense she was feeling a little bit badly about this, but Ellen and her newlywed husband had somehow run up a huge debt on their credit card in a month's time. It was huge. And there was some problem with the bank. Maybe it was a debit card. I don't know what it was. But they had just run up a huge debt. Well, what did Ellen do? Of course, she wasn't going to take any of those nice things back. She went to her dad. And her dad said, well, sweetie, I'll pay this for you. And paid off that debt. Now, what was Ellen learning? Ellen was learning, okay, if this happens again, maybe I can go to Daddy one more time. That's the wrong lesson. We don't want our children to be dependent on us. We want them to grow up. And that means they're going to have to live through some hard times. They're going to have to figure it out on their own. They're going to have to grow up. So think on this one just a little bit, because maybe it sounds like I'm being a little harsh, but when I think about some of the hard times that my kids went through when they were in junior high and high school, I see already how God has used that for this stage of their lives. And that is a good thing. That's a good thing that I didn't always intervene. I wanted to make the path smooth for them. But they began to learn lessons about God providing and taking care of them and helping them grow up. Number four, be on their side. Now, this sounds like a contradiction, but it really is not. Surely your teenager has figured out that life is not fair, no matter how hard you try to make it so. You know, I always tried to make it everything come out even, but it doesn't always. Life is unfair, but it still stinks sometimes, doesn't it, when life is unfair? And if your kids are going feeling a little bit like that, take them to the book of Genesis and the story of Joseph. Boy, if there was a teenager who had unfair, that was really unfair. He was 17 years old. He had a lot of unfair stuff. Let them know that even though life is unfair, you feel badly about it, you can't change it, but you understand that sometimes life is hard. This is what I mean. The first point under this, be their cheerleader along the sidelines or the manager in their corner. If your son is struggling with low self-esteem, he needs to hear from his family that he is great, that he is wonderful, that he is handsome, you know, whatever it is. If your daughter feels like a plain Jane, now is not the time to tell them, to remind her of the story of the ugly duckling, okay? find ways to help her feel beautiful. Now, I want you to understand where I'm coming from. It doesn't mean that suddenly we're sinking hundreds of dollars into plastic surgery for your child, okay? But when I was in junior high, there were two or three boys who kept telling me how ugly I was. And I am now almost 50. And I still remember that, and it still hurts. That's still in the back of my mind. So what you may ought to do, if your child is going through that junior high stage of kind of feeling ugly, your daughter, then help them find simple ways that would help them through that. Maybe she needs a pair of contacts. Maybe she just needs a new hairstyle. If she's got braces, grin and bear it. there's nothing you can do about braces. But help them if they're struggling in that particular stage. Just because that is one carryover, at least for girls. Or it was for me anyway. For girls, that seems to carry over into adulthood. And of course, I'm talking about moderation in all things. But if your child is struggling in that area and there are ways that you can help them, then do that. Along those lines, get to know their friends and enjoy their friends if you can. Make your home where your kids' friends want to be. Now, let me tell you the secret to that. Have food. Lots of food. That's all you need. And they will come. I think in two instances, I remember one time when Eric had a bunch of friends over, and for some reason, we all ended up in the kitchen, and I don't think there was any food left, so it wasn't that, you know, they were drawn to the kitchen because of the food, but we were all standing around the kitchen just talking and laughing, and I still have that great memory of Eric as an 18-year-old doing that. Well, then my next memory is of our youngest son, Kyle. He had ran around with a bunch of guys. There were like 7 or 8 of them in his class. So they were just really close. They are still close. That's pretty cool that 6 or 7 years later they're still that close. But all of us were standing around again in the kitchen. We were talking about music. And here are these 17-year-old guys, and they were talking about, oh, how they wish they could play the piano. And one of them said, I would, Mrs. Parks, do you think you could still teach me to play the piano? I'm going, wow, this is from a 17-year-old? Cool. And they were talking about songs they liked, and one of the guys was learning the guitar, and I thought, this is priceless. You know that MasterCard commercial? This was a priceless moment because we were having so much fun. I was with all these boys and we were talking about music and they were asking me about music. I just was really excited about that. So one of the reasons why you want to get to know your kids' friends is it helps you know what's going on in your kids' lives, a little of their thinking. That's important. I wonder so much, and of course, you know, you know, hindsight is always perfect vision, but I think about that tragedy in Columbine, and I wonder if part of it could have been prevented if those sets of parents had known what their kids' friends were thinking about, were spending their time on. You know, it might not have been prevented, but it is very important that we know, just know who your kids are hanging around, because sometimes who your kids are hanging around is not a good thing. I remember, and we'll get to this a little bit in the driving stage, but I remember one kid who Eric was hanging around. He had, I think, 3 car wrecks in the space of maybe 5 months. And I said, Eric, don't ride in the car with Blake. Don't ride in the car with him. And he was a good friend of Blake's. But Eric had already picked up on that. He said, oh yeah, no, he's a bad driver. You don't have to worry. But you know, they're, when you get to know your kids' friends a little bit, if there are red flags that you see, you better tell your kids about it. And you can do that if you know their friends a little bit. Listen when they talk. Really listen. Don't offer any advice unless they ask for it. Just listen. Now for my daughter, that was easy because she would talk all the time. It was great. In fact, I found out about my son's lives through my daughter because, you know, she was always right there. She would let me know all kinds of stuff. But for my boys, they just weren't talkers so much. So if there was an occasion that Eric would come into the kitchen while I was cooking supper, man, I dropped everything. Hey, forget it. Forget that cheese sauce. Tell me what you're thinking about today. Because that was so important because it was a little more rare. And I just wanted to listen to whatever they had to say. I laugh about my sister-in-law, married to my brother. She's a pastor's wife. She has homeschooled her 4 kids for many years. One of my daughters, Janae, is just more quiet. And so we would be at our family gatherings, you know, Thanksgiving or Christmas or something like that. And she said, oh, Janae's about to say something. Be quiet. And I always got such a kick out of that because we know how important it is. Sometimes you cannot pull information out of your kids. So if there is that point when they just start talking, I'm telling you, drop everything and just listen. Don't chime in with, oh, yeah. And let me tell you something. Don't do that. Just listen. Just listen. That's what I mean about being on their side.
We'll stop there for today, but we'll conclude this message next time here on Building Blocks for the Family. Our guest today has been Carol Parks, Parenting Through the Teen Years. Building Blocks for the Family is a production of BBN. We're trying to help you build a strong family to the glory of God. For more information on getting a copy of today's broadcast, you can visit us at bbnradio.org. Go to the program schedule and then click on Building Blocks for the Family. bbnradio.org.
That concludes the online feature. By the way, BBN is on social media. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter.